This is Mark Strassman, a reporter with Utopia Media News Network. We're about to speak to Don Jones, who's the Vice President for Business Development in Healthcare at Qualcomm. Welcome to Utopia Media Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thank you very much.
The immediate impetus for this conversation was the fact that you're going to be speaking at a Speak and Spark event at USC later this month. Tell us just a little bit about that Speak and Spark group, and tell us what you're going to be talking about.
Well, the Speak and Spark group is part of a regular conference series out of the telecom industry effort that's running out of USC and in conjunction with the School of Business. And I was invited up to speak on the convergence of cell phones and cellular technology with medical devices and healthcare delivery.
Well, when's that going to be, that event?
That event is occurring on October 19th.
And it's not at the point yet where they're going to be webcasting it, huh?
Not that I'm aware of, although I actually don't know what their arrangements are. Our capabilities are.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your role at Qualcomm in the healthcare business development department.
Well, my role is to actually figure out all the different ways that Qualcomm's technologies and actually cellular technologies in general can be made relevant to healthcare. And so we've spent a lot of time working with a wide variety of medical device manufacturers to essentially, at the end of the day, either integrate medical devices into cell phones or cell phones into medical devices so that essentially you can create connected diagnostic devices, connected therapeutic devices, and connected monitoring devices.
Now, as this now stands, how widespread are these implementations?
Well, I would say it's still very early, but there are products that are commercial. There are products, for example, that provide 24/7 EKG monitoring of patients. It's the same as being in a doctor's office, have your EKG taken, but having it done on a 24/7 basis and working when you're driving down the freeway at 70 miles an hour.
Now, say a little bit about how that actually works. Essentially, our electrodes are taped to your energy points, and then how is that fed back into the healthcare system?
Yeah, in this case, the patient wears a set of three leads or electrodes that are on the patient's chest. That are themselves connected to a small wireless device that is essentially hung around the patient's neck. So, in other words, the EKGs are being monitored and transmitted from the patient's body in what amounts to a body area network.
Right.
And through this body area network, the signal is picked up by a device that looks a little bit like a PDA, but it's a specially designed device for capturing the EKG signal, analyzing the EKG signal, and if an arrhythmia is detected, making a connection through the cellular network, contacting a call center where a second analysis occurs, and EKG technicians look at the signal and then decide how and what are the appropriate interventions necessary.
So after checking with your insurance to see if you can afford the intervention, I suppose, right? Now, you were talking essentially about having electrodes taped to your chest. What about already implanted pacemakers and other devices like that? Can they transmit on a local body network and plug into this network as well?
Absolutely. About 3 weeks ago, the first patient in California was implanted with the first defibrillator with a radio frequency transmitter built in. That connects to a cellular-based device, and that device monitors the health of the medical device, the implant itself, as well as the patient.
Now, I read a week ago about these implanted defibrillators. This is a big healthcare cost issue, in fact, about whether everybody ought to get one who could be considered at all to need one.
Well, they are expensive, but it's outside of Qualcomm's purview. We're not makers of medical devices. We're makers of connectivity to devices. So if the healthcare industry figures out that it makes clinical sense and improves outcomes, we think we bring to the equation a way of connecting these devices on an anywhere, anytime kind of basis.
Okay, what about the kind of devices that could be used by people who are in danger of having other medical conditions precipitate and need to be able to notify or have an automatic notification take place to healthcare providers?
Sure, we've seen a number of examples. Let me just run through a couple. One deployed by Orange in France right now employs a ischemia detector, which is basically looking for a heart attack.
Right.
In the form of a chest belt that is worn by the patient, and that chest belt communicates again in a body area network to a cell phone, which then essentially raises the alarm if the ischemia is actually detected. That's in an early pilot deployment in France as we speak. There are deployed commercially in Korea cell phones, for example, that have integrated glucose meters, so diabetics can actually use a single device, their cell phone that they can make phone calls on, to also do their blood testing.
What about telepresence in the delivery of healthcare services? I've done some interviews with a company called InTouch in Santa Barbara, and that builds a robot that works by Wi-Fi in hospitals and lets doctors stay at home or at their office and wheel themselves in through a robot into a hospital room and carry on consultations with their patients. That uses Wi-Fi. What other kind of apparatus is Qualcomm involved with that would allow for the telepresence of physicians or nurse practitioners or other medical professionals on location that they couldn't get to easily or conveniently?
Absolutely. This is going to have a huge impact on healthcare in the long run. Just as the vast majority of phones being built today have digital camera phones built into them, but many of the phones that you're going to see over the course of the next, really from now for the next 3 to 4 years, are basically going to have video capabilities. And as the data speeds of the networks reach the point where they will support video teleconferencing, which will start happening in late 2006, early 2007 in North America, you will see these phones, which using Qualcomm chips in these phones support the video teleconferencing capability, you'll see these phones being able to be used for live video teleconferencing. With high-quality lenses and cameras as part of the equation. And at that point, I like to ask healthcare providers, when the vast majority of consumers have live video teleconferencing capabilities in their pocket because their phone that they picked up at the local cellular phone store came with that, how are you going to answer the question when they say, I just cut my finger on the kitchen knife and I'd like to find out whether I need to come in for stitches or not? I'll show you.
Well, this gets to what the core questions here is. I've only had one physician who was willing to accept my emails, and she canceled that project after she couldn't figure out how to get rid of spam or something. What do you know from your point of view about the psychology and the structural impediments or facilitators of reforming the healthcare system so that doctors can practice this kind of telepresence?
Well, first of all, I think, number one, it's inevitable. Number two, I think some of the early adopters on both the physician and the patient side are already doing it. There's actually a number of health plans paying for reimbursing for email patient communications.
And are they ready to reimburse for telepresence and telemedical?
Well, I think there's already a great example because Medicare already pays for video teleconferencing. It's already reimbursed and already has its own CPT codes. It's already well understood in the context of Medicare. So I think that one actually, in some cases, is going to be easier to understand than email. And there's a great example right now. Jeff Rideout, the chief medical officer up at Cisco, has teamed Cisco together with Intel, and they've put together two programs that reimburse for employee access of these big technology companies to electronic medical records at certain Bay Area medical groups, as well as reimburses for email consultations between patient and physician.
Okay, you mentioned medical records. There's a huge area there now for the digitalization and virtualization and remote storage and distributed storage of medical records. What role is Qualcomm's technology going to play in that?
I think what's gonna play in the medical record side is, frankly, technology that's currently available on the shelf. And what I mean by that is medical records are typically going to be accessed on desktop computers, laptop computers, notebooks, tablets, and PDAs, all of which can take advantage of the high-speed cellular networks that have been deployed, and all of which are available in hardware that you can purchase on the shelf today. So the reality is there are good examples already deployed today, PDA-based, laptop-based, tablet-based, et cetera, already on the cellular network, and I think you're just going to see the growth of that area.
Okay. Now, another emerging trend is the idea of, not necessarily of self-treatment or the sort of the distribution of the authority and the information necessary to make healthcare decisions to the consumer of those decisions, which is, of course, the person themselves. What do you see as the future of that, and what role, again, is Qualcomm and wireless generally going to play in that?
Well, I think we're going to see several trends. One is in terms of self-management, you'll see solutions like the one I mentioned in Korea where the patient is managing their diabetes but using their cell phone as part of the tools used to, for example, measure their glucose, get a reading, and do things like calculate how much insulin they should inject. So that's one way.
If we could focus on that for a second as an example, where is the expert intelligence that's necessary to make these decisions going to reside? On the cell phone, in the network, in the doctor's office? What are the options about how that's going to happen?
Well, the answer is a little bit of all of the above. Most glucometers, if there's any intelligence in them at all other than being able to display the reading, it's self-contained in the glucometer. So at one level, it'll be self-contained in the phone itself. But since the phone represents a connected computing device, it's able to share that information so that, for example, if a young child, let's say an 8-year-old, has type 1 diabetes and is testing, you now have the opportunity for mom to know, number one, whether the child tested on time, whether they're what the actual glucose level actually was, and what other interactions the kid has taken in terms of taking their insulin that is prescribed, because the mom can be automatically notified. Mom can also be automatically notified if the kid is not testing on time, and the mom can intervene. So it's a way of connecting a caregiver to a kid essentially almost automatically.
So it's really the same model we were talking about back with electrocardiograms that's monitoring, or glucose, or any other physiological function can be monitored remotely and distributed to the appropriate interveners in the process.
Yeah, I think the message we like to try and give at Qualcomm is the cell phone represents a computing node on the internet that can be then interfaced with healthcare-related software and medical devices, and that information can be collected, displayed for the patient, consumer to interact with, and then shared with others, caregivers, family members, healthcare providers, physicians, to be used appropriately.
And for example, people who are taking multiple drugs or single drugs and so on, they can in fact be notified through their cell phone that it's 2 o'clock, time to take this pill, or it's 6 o'clock, time to take that one.
That's exactly right, and even further than that, it's, you know, based on how many you're supposed to have taken, you probably are close to being out of pills. Would you like to get a refill?
Right, and that would essentially then go back to the insurance provider and the pharmacy and be delivered, or you can be alerted that it's ready to be picked up.
That's exactly right.
Okay. What do you see so far, and what are you expecting to be happening in the near future here in the next 2 or 3 years in terms of the changes that this infrastructure is going to require or allow on the part of physicians, insurers, hospitals, and patients?
Well, I think the area that's going to get the most attention and make the most noise and where the most dollars will be invested, frankly, will be related to electronic medical records and order entry systems and remote access to both of those from a telecom perspective, so that you can access, physicians can access those record systems or order entry systems, whether they be on the golf course, in the car, at home, at a restaurant, etc. And so you will see lots of interactions with cellular-based PDAs and laptop computers.
What do you see on the sort of the human relations front about whether doctors want to be bothered on the golf course in the restaurant, or whether they're or at home, or whether they still want to have their office hours at the office, and how is that going to factor in?
Well, at the end of the day, physicians must provide 24-hour access to care, and they've worked out various call schedules, so presumably you won't disrupt the call schedule pattern, but if they're the one on call, they're going to be contacted regardless of where they are, and they're going to need access to the information. And frankly, the consumer and the healthcare system and the medical legal system will all expect that they have access to those record systems, and they're not guessing as to what the next course of action should be for a particular patient.
The U.S. spends about 13% of GDP on medical care these days, I think. Do you expect overall this trend is going to reduce or increase that percentage?
Well, initially, it's going to the expenditure on healthcare IT is going to be a new expenditure. But I think there's been a lot of research and a lot of financial modeling to suggest that dollars spent on IT are going to reap huge cost savings benefits in the long run. And so I think while we're going to see quite a bit of an increase in investment in IT, it's in an industry that has a very small investment currently in IT, and if it will just follow the trends of other industries, they will reap the returns in the form of some savings. So I don't believe it's the single answer to our healthcare challenges in terms of the cost increases, but it's potentially one of the things we can do, that is invest in IT and telecommunications infrastructure to help manage those costs downward.
Who's going to be making those decisions? The customer, the consumer, the physicians, the hospitals, the insurers, the federal government?
Again, it's one of those questions where a little bit of everybody. I think you're going to see physicians and hospitals making the decisions on in the areas of electronic medical records and order entry systems. I think you're going to see the federal government making some decisions and providing some incentives in that same area, as well as in some of the areas for clinical monitoring of patients. And I think you're going to see a number of consumer-based solutions come out where consumers are reaching into their own pocket, but perhaps being reimbursed through their flexible spending account from their health reimbursement account at work, or their new health savings account, health insurance plan.
Is there likely to be a competitive advantage for early adopters, be they physicians, patients, or hospitals or insurers?
I think there are some evidence of that. We have seen some evidence, for example, of physicians who are, for example, accepting email from patients, and as a result, through word of mouth, are getting patients who are looking for the physicians that have, that are offering that kind of connectivity. So I think there is some examples. I think the medical legal system is actually going to drive the adoption of electronic medical records, and I think there will be some financial incentives offered by health plans and the federal government for physicians to move to electronic medical records. So I think you will see some early adopters take advantage of those financial incentives when they're available.
Okay, I want to thank you for bringing us up to date on this rapidly evolving field, and thank you for your time, and hope we can talk some more as the technology and its adaptation continues to evolve.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.